Mayor Curry calls for more police on the streets as another deadly shooting rocks the city. Red light cameras are under investigation in Florida, and Home Depot snaps up Interline Brands, some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9 and now subscribe to that daily podcast. Never miss a show. Catch it on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Then later, travel tips with Judy Wells, how to get out of the Florida heat this summer. Plus, the famed Southern cooking of Jacksonville's Potter's House is all in a new cookbook. We'll tell you about it. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for our weekly media roundtable. Here today, Mark Woods of the Florida Times Union. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons is here, editor at the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, always great to see you. Thanks for being here. Lots of news from the week to discuss, from that red light camera investigation to local Vietnam veterans speaking out about Donald Trump's remarks on John McCain. Lots to talk about, but first this morning, gun violence and public safety lead things off. Mayor Lenny Curry presented his budget proposal to the city council this week, calling for more police on the streets, among other things. At the same time, 20-year-old busboy Daniel Roer was shot twice in the head Wednesday night and killed behind the Blind Rabbit in Riverside. And we need to point out that also this week, the documentary 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets screened at the White House the other day. That's the acclaimed film about the murder of 17-year-old Jacksonville teen Jordan Davis by Michael Dunn. We want your calls right now on Jacksonville's violent crime and public safety problem. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. AG, let's begin with you. Just a couple of days after the mayor said we need more police on the streets, there's been another fatal shooting, this one in a neighborhood that at least sees itself as one of the safer neighborhoods in Jacksonville. But of course, the violent crime problem in Duval County extends beyond the zip codes people stereotypically ascribe violent crime to. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the thing with that particular stretch, the Park and King area to College and King, is that it was pretty recently gentrified. And if you live over in Riverside or near Riverside, you know, College Street traditionally is a demarcation point for gentrification versus lack thereof. And a lot of the violent crime in Riverside and Avondale over the years has been people coming in from, you know, North Riverside and other neighborhoods. This is another incident that illustrates that unfortunate trend. I know a lot of people who are devastated by this man's death, who knew him personally, thought he's the sweetest guy in the world, had nothing but good things to say about him. And, you know, the neighborhood is obviously in collective mourning right now. But this is really the thing. When you're gentrifying these neighborhoods, whether you look at Riverside, Murray Hill, you know, the Brooklyn area, you know, things like this are unfortunately inevitable. It's just kind of a byproduct of the gentrification process.
But I think there was a belief that King Street in particular was kind of beyond that. I mean, it is weird looking at that street and thinking back to what it was like just, you know, 10 years ago. It still is on that upward curve, but this is, I think this shocks people, you know, this idea that it's intruding upon their safe place. And that's the type of thing that does galvanize change.
That's really a mark of institutional and structural racism. There are parts of the city that see deadly shootings every day of the week. Mark Woods.
Yeah, that was one of the things that struck me about the story was that, it's truly heartbreaking. You read it and it's so horribly sad. But don't we probably have stories like this?
All the time.
Right. That aren't people... It's sad because he was doing absolutely nothing wrong. He's taking out the trash. He's doing... And so you say that's why it's sad. But there's people killed in another part of town who aren't doing drugs. They just... Their only crime is they're living in a poor area that has crime happening around them. And they become a victim. And we don't have the same kind of outpouring. That's not to say this doesn't deserve it.
I mean, of course,
It's horribly sad.
549-2937 to join the show. As this shooting takes place, Tim, AG, the Jordan Davis documentary this week about gun violence screened at the White House. Mayor Curry gave a budget address saying we need to hire more police officers. Public safety was the hallmark of his mayoral campaign.
It will be interesting to see, because the thing that always strikes me is that we elect a sheriff. The mayor's job is not actually public safety, and yet public safety and education are the two things that voters want the mayor to deal with. 40 police officers, 40 whatever, reserve officers, that for a city this size, that's a drop in the bucket. I mean, it's not exactly the overwhelming force that you could see as a game changer, but it is a step forward, I guess.
AG.
Well, it's just really hard to onboard that many officers at one time. The 147 plus 92 community service officers, that's one caution I would have there. And, you know, going back to the point made, we do have an outpouring of reaction to this murder that's different than, you know, previous murders that we've talked about, you know, recently also. I mean, a murder happens in, you know, Northwest Quadrant does not get this kind of coverage, does not get 2,000 words in the paper, does not get around-the-clock coverage in all the local newscasts. That being said, this violence epidemic that Jacksonville is having, there's no, you don't elect the mayor and it goes away. It's something that it took a while to get here and it's going to take a while to fix. And it's more than just police. It's also, you know, finding a way to, remedy the situation that creates people wanting to do this in the first place.
And the mayor has called for a resurgence of the long-term prevention and intervention efforts that were started under Mayor Payton via the Jacksonville Journey. The question now is, can that be funded? Can those programs be beefed up again to make an impact?
Well, the problem with funding the journey has always been it is self-consciously a long-term sort of thing. It's trying to basically affect the next generation, and there literally is no return on investment in the first 2, 3, 4 years, in the first mayoral term. So, you know, when Payton instituted that, that was a long game sort of thing of the kids in elementary school now, let's get them there. The problem with the funding being cut is now we're reaping the result of that change.
Mark Woods.
I mean, that's a good point. And you mentioned you kind of lumped education and crime together, and that's same thing can be said for education. I think both of those, you know, if we want to monitor them, we want to return on investment, and a lot of times it is hard to get that instantly or even in a year. It takes a generation. So those, I think the city needs to decide, do we believe in these programs? Are we willing to stick to this and not just for a year or an administration, but for the long term?
Go ahead, Tim.
The other part of that is simply putting more cops on the street isn't, you know, it at best is a Band-Aid, and it also becomes you have more police officers, you have more opportunity for bad interactions, and, you know, that's kind of a powder keg waiting to be let off as well.
And let's go to your calls as we discuss the issue of public safety in Jacksonville on our Friday Media Roundtable, 549-2937, Jamie in Ortega Forest. Hey, Jamie, good morning.
Good morning. Don't mean to be repetitive, but I wanted to echo a sentiment that was being discussed by your guests. Very common, as well as in the discussion of Baltimore a few months ago, that there are communities that are either underrepresented, underdeveloped economically or in terms of education, and that this is the source of much of the unrest that I'm sure we're discussing here. And that certainly policing is important, but is that really as community-minded as other procedures, whether it's having police officers that are members of the communities that have problems, or it's more economic and educational development, and whether the idea that crime prevention from a policing standpoint is the only solution seems a little short-sighted. And I just wanted to echo that point.
No, thank you, Jamie. You're absolutely right. Whether it's City Hall's Blight Committee or long-term economic development efforts that have had mixed results over the years, A.G. Gankarski, these are complex issues that Jacksonville has struggled with for a long time.
Right. And, I mean, we even saw it with the Blight Committee on a council this week. They changed the name to the Nice Committee.
What was the reason for that?
A rebranding. Garrett Dens took over the chair from Denise Lee, who's now in the administration. And, you know, he wanted to turn it into positive solutions. He gave a speech at the end of the meeting where he talked about biblical name changes and what they represented and how this represented a new direction, a new day, and so forth. And that's really the thing. There's always going to be recalibration of approaches. prevention, intervention. Those things are something that Alvin Brown talked about when he was mayor. Lenny Curry's talked about it. John Payton talked about it before. And of course, Sheriff Rutherford and Sheriff Williams have both talked about it. And you're always trying to figure out the precise mixture. And no matter what you do, there's always going to be something that says, well, we could do this better. You have to look at longitudinal trends over the years, over the decades, as Mark was saying. You've got to basically take a long-term measured approach that's immune from the political process. And we're going to see if the Curry administration can pull that off, because it didn't seem to work in the previous administration in quite that way. They moved away from the journey oversight, and it became a campaign issue.
Can we get nice committees before elections, during elections, as opposed to after, maybe?
I just want to say, nice baby. I actually saw that news, AG, on your Twitter feed, and honestly thought it was a joke at first.
It's actually real.
The nice committee. And then I went and read the thing. It's like, yeah.
Lots of tweets, emails, and phone calls at 549-2937. Richard tweets the show, finally, you're talking about the real issue. Institutional racism makes white murder horrible, but black murder the norm. 549-2937 to give us your thoughts. Bill is in Clay County. Hey, Bill, you're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
Great, thanks.
You know, as your previous guest brought out, you know, one of the biggest catalysts for crime is poverty. And you look anywhere in the world, we have poverty and lack of the ability for people to improve the economic condition and things of that nature. You have, you know, terrorism, drug gangs, things of that nature. So that's a common denominator. The thing that I think we have to understand is we have to take a serious look at the issue of poverty and the causes for it. There's a lot of things that we've been doing in the last 30 or 40 years that have created a situation where we've created a disadvantage for the disadvantaged, education, policing, things of that nature. But there's some fundamental things that we've been doing in our society, selling off of public treasure, outsourcing, tax credits for businesses to move into communities. They plop down, and they don't hire locally. They don't buy goods and services locally. So a lot of these things contribute to the fact that the urban corridor, and you can see it for the last 40 years, has got progressively worse in terms of how it's dealt with the social issues. And I think if we don't have a serious issue on poverty, we're not going to be able to really make an impact on crime or the things that we need in terms of dependency. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. That argument has been made, too, in terms of improving educational outcomes in Duval County. Mark and Tim, in a county where more than half of the kids are on free or reduced lunch, what about the caller's point?
It's absolutely valid. I'm not sure there isn't an answer to it. He said he'd take his answer off the air. I'd just probably echo what he'd say. But yeah, I mean, I guess with education, I feel probably more hopeful than a lot of people do. I mean,
Wait, the radio show for cynics. I mean, you're hopeful.
This is the nice committee. I think there's a lot of good things happening in our public schools. I feel like
there are.
I feel like they are making strides in the right direction. That's not to say there's tons of issues still. But I feel optimistic when I'm, I have a daughter in public school, and when I get out and do stories in public schools. So that definitely gives me hope for the future.
And we want your calls here on the show as we discuss the top stories of the week with our excellent Friday Media Roundtable, the best analysis you'll hear anywhere. 549-2937 to join us, and also making headlines earlier in the week. The FDLE says it will investigate Redflex. That's the company that operates red light cameras in Jacksonville and statewide. Corruption and bribery probes in two other states have called the integrity of this company and the cameras into question. AG Gankarski, remains to be seen whether Redflex bribed Florida officials. There is evidence they have done so in other states.
Other states, other continents. They got into Australia market and got pushed out for controversial reasons. Redflex does really well in China also, which kind of says a lot about it. And in Chicago, of course, the Redflex
bribery in Chicago.
Yes,
no.
The Redflex chief executive,
Karen, that is shocking.
Karen Finley, not the artist Karen Finley, but the chief executive of Redflex, was implicated in a bribery scandal also, and you know, it's really a situation where you look at surveillance cameras, you look at these programs, and, you know, you take a hard look at who they benefit. They benefit private equity. It's another example of, you know, socialized costs, privatized profits. And, you know, it's really interesting that the Red Flex you know, issue is come up now, because a few years ago when these cameras were implemented, you know, the critiques were basically being rendered. Now the critics are proven right.
Yeah, that is the interesting thing, that none of this should be surprising to anybody who read about it when they were being put in.
Uh-huh.
The area of Pennsylvania I grew up in had a private prison scandal a couple years ago where judges were putting people in prison because they had stock in the prison companies. And there is this issue with, once you privatize justice, it's kind of obvious where it's going to go. It's not exactly a, you know, how could this happen sort of thing.
Right.
It's like on the presidential level, though. You got one prison company giving to Hillary Clinton, the other one to Marco Rubio. They win either way.
549-2937, Chuck at the Beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hello, guys. I grew up in Duval County and went through the Duval County school system. And one of the things, and my children did too, and one of the things we spend very little time in the school system is teaching our children social skills. And I would have no problem with 20% of the time the kids are in high school from the beginning of their education, finding out who the children are who have problems, and think of all the mental issues that we have and all of the depression issues that we have. Finding out, just think, if you could take the kids in Duval County and teach them social skills, how to interact in society. And where do we have the best place to do that? It's the school system. They start in kindergarten. And my experience with the Duval County system, with myself and my kids, is basically we spend zero amount of time teaching our kids how to live in society. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for your thoughts on that. And we need to move on and talk about a few other news and notes from the week. Keep calling us up at 549-2937, but we want to take a moment to talk about Mark Woods' column this week on Donald Trump and John McCain. Of course, Trump under fire for saying that he did not believe John McCain was a war hero. Mark, you actually interviewed Dick Stratton of Atlantic Beach about his time as a POW in the infamous Hanoi Hilton, where he and McCain were imprisoned. And what did Dick Stratton have to say?
We had a few choice comments. I met him in 07 when Senator McCain was campaigning here and came to Fleet Landing and did an event. And he pointed to this gentleman in the front row with this white flat top and said, you know, here's the true hero of the Hanoi Hilton, and made a point to say lots of kind things about Dick Stratton. And it turns out he's been doing that for 40 years. When they came back during that time, there was this famous photo of Dick Stratton bowing to the captors. And
right.
So he took a lot of, he took some heat for that. Some people questioning, you know, had he caved? Had he become, you know, and McCain got back and immediately said, you know, he's an honorable man.
He was doing that in a satirical way, wasn't he, sort of?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so, without actually knowing that, it's really hilarious. I mean, the idea that in that situation, the guy,
right,
you know, would basically, I don't know, have the presence of mind to do that. That right there.
So, well, I think now talking to him a little bit, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
He's a funny guy. But so it hit me when, you know, McCain's getting attacked. He stood up for, we have several POWs in our area, but specifically.
And the POW flag originated in Jacksonville,
right,
you wrote. I didn't know that.
Right, yes. And so it hit me, I wanted to talk specifically to Mr. Stratton, because McCain had stood up for him, and I figured he might just by chance stand up for Mr. McCain. And sure enough, yeah, he had some choice words about Mr. Trump.
And in fact, you write, Stratton recalled that while McCain was a target of the captors' abuse, while Trump was clubbing in New York's hottest night spots thanks to money from his father's real estate business, McCain was being clubbed in the Hanoi Hilton because his father was the admiral directing U.S. forces in the Pacific.
Yeah, that was my line, I guess. But he had better.
I just wanted to give you your credit,
okay,
on that. But he had some choice words
favorite,
of his own.
Yeah, my favorite one from him was, he said, "I have no credibility to talk about New York City real estate nor hairdos." And you have to remember, he has this flat top hair.
Right.
And he has no credibility at all to talk about anything to do with the military, let alone a prisoner.
Which is the part of the interesting bit of this is that Trump did feel that he had the credibility and that it was valuable for his campaign to do this. Where, I mean, I don't know how many Trump supporters there are in Jacksonville, but I would, you know, with my knowledge of the veteran community here, whatever support he had there, I can see being, you know, rapidly eroded. But obviously, on a national scale, it's paid off to some extent.
He's polling well, at least for the time being. AG.
Yeah, I mean, the people supporting Donald Trump for president, such as they are not doing so because of his national security bona fides. They're doing so because of the spectacle. They like the show that Donald Trump's providing. They like the creative destruction he's embarked on, you know, calling John McCain out is one example of it. Giving out Lindsey Graham's phone number on television is another example of it. And, you know, Donald Trump is not there to be a constructive influence in the Republican Party or on the debate. Donald Trump is there for publicity. And the fact that his campaign's had this kind of traction is sort of indicative of some issues that the Republican Party has nationally and locally. The fact that there's a void in terms of ideas, a void in terms of, you know, meaningful policy prescriptions. You know, we've seen what the Tea Party has done over the last 8 years to the Republican Party, basically cautioning the debate. And, you know, it leaves an opening for sensationalists like Donald Trump to jump in and lead the polls.
549-2937 to take your calls on the top stories of the week. Doran on the West Side. Doran, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? I'm calling to just say, just express my concern about the support for Donald Trump. You know, I've listened carefully to NPR's reporting, and I'm moved by the fact that some of the supporters expressed the fact that they feel Donald Trump speaks for them, that he's not being bought, and that he isn't politically correct. That came up, I think, in the NPR reporting yesterday. And I'm worried by the fact that there are a number of, I suppose, intelligent and plugged-in voters who would support Donald Trump for any reason. And the fact that I think it reflects a real decline in our political landscape, that folks are less interested in statesmanship, and people like President Obama get castigated for really being good statesmen. And that seems to be out of favor now. And I would love to hear what your guests have to say about statesmanship and diplomacy. That seems to be out of favor. And that worries me about the American political landscape. And I'll listen to your comments on the air.
Thanks for the call. Tim.
I think there's always been a stream of, you know, P.T. Barnum-ish, yeah, you know, to American politics.
And there's an angry populist streak in our body politics.
Going back to Jackson.
I mean, Donald Trump's tapping into that.
But the thing I find fascinating is the last person who comes to mind when I think about a, you know, kind of eccentric, self-made millionaire political figure is Ross Perot.
Right.
Who had a somewhat quixotic sort of campaign, but had a thing he wanted it part of the conversation. And what's long not made sense to me about Trump, or what would make me respect Trump more in a way, is if he really had an issue with immigration, or really had an issue,
if he really,
you know,
believed
he was
what
really,
he's
like,
saying,
anti POW, and like that's,
you don't
what,
think he believes what he's saying.
I don't think he has any big idea he's trying to introduce into the conversation
himself.
Right. That's
his big idea is me.
But you know, so you go back to Perot, who was like, you know, he was anti NAFTA. That's what he wanted the conversation to be. If he wasn't in the race, right, it wouldn't have been discussed the same way. We're not talking about any issue because of Trump other than, as Mark says, Trump himself.
Well, what about the issue of illegal immigration? That's the issue Donald Trump is hammering on.
But he's not hammering on it as an issue. I mean, do you actually think we're having more intelligent conversation about it because of Trump?
There's been a lot more discussion about it in the last few months.
I think he's the Republicans' party's nightmare. I mean, you know, if you want to create a path for Hillary to become president, he's it. You know, either as a candidate who stays in long enough, or a candidate who becomes a third-party candidate. I mean, he can change that.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately the political capital that Donald Trump has as a disruptor, and not as a constructive force. And, you know, honestly, this happens every so often. I mean, we looked at 1992 with Ross Perot and his his bid for the presidency. Remember, he had one bid where he's polling really well in the polls compared to Bush and Clinton. And then he got off the race. He said there were Republican dirty tricks at his daughter's wedding. And he lost credibility and declined in the polls and then ran again in 96 and did even worse. So these third-party candidates or these outlier candidates kind of have half-lives in terms of their support. They poll well initially. Then the oppo dumps happen. Then, you know, the campaign gets real and they go to single digits in the polls. So I don't know if Donald Trump's going to be a factor in November 2016 necessarily, either as a third party candidate or, God forbid, as a Republican nominee. I don't see it happening. I think this is it for him.
I'm curious, though, if the typical political machinations work in quite the same way with him. And I'm sure they will, but you know, you look at like a Herman Cain, and that was kind of a self-destructive sort of thing. Yes, it was the opposition research that, you know, showed his personal issues. But at
this point with Donald Trump, what opposition research
what
would
you gonna
take
do?
Donald Trump down?
He's a known quantity. Exactly. I mean, his personal issues have been written about. His divorces, his bankruptcies.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who say they support him, you know, obviously know that sort of stuff. You know, I find in some ways his appearance, we were talking about this before we came on air, you know, at a religious right forum where, you know, basically he's talking about he's never asked God for forgiveness. That sort of thing, I think, is what's going to doom his candidate.
Yeah. Julie in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Julie.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is, I've been listening and I, you know, heard all the buzz about Donald Trump. And I guess I'm just adding to what you're saying kind of is that I haven't heard him really speak specifically to any policy. And I just feel like the last caller said of the caller before, it's really a dumbing down of what's happening in our political conversation. Governor Kasich in Ohio has so many interesting, real policy items that he's talking about, like expanding, he is a Republican who's expanding Medicare for the poor because he thinks when he gets to the pearly gates that he's going to be asked, like, they're not going to care about small government. They're going to care about, did you help the poor? And yet Donald Trump's bombastic statements are making the headlines and not just a thoughtful person. And I am, you know, independent, leaning toward a Democrat voter. And it just is, it's just so frustrating to me. So I guess I don't have a question, just a comment that my question would be, what policy has Donald Trump actually said? And I just feel like he's a corporate-backed media person to just get on the air and be a big distraction for all the other, you know, to take away actually some thoughtful political discussion. And my question. What has Donald Trump said in policy that he'll do?
Yeah.
And nobody seems to care that he lies completely about the amount of people that were at his rally in Arizona and all these other things. So anyway, thank you. And what has Donald Trump done?
Thanks, Julie. Julie at the beaches.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing also this early in the Republican field. I mean, we saw it in 2008. We saw it in 2012. There's all kinds of people who lead in these polls and then fade away. Donald Trump does have a money advantage that the others didn't have, but there seems to be a point where people get exposed and then washed out. And regarding the serious political discussion, you know, political newscasts on cable news, on the blogosphere, what have you, they don't lead with this stuff. They lead with sensationalism. They lead with a hot quote. They lead with something that's going to go viral and be retweeted.
It's a 24-hour news cycle, page view driven sort of thing.
Exactly.
Who was the puppet on Black Mirror? Waldo? I see Trump and...
I know. She mentioned the governor of Ohio, Kasich. She sees him as a substantive candidate. As the race continues, we will continue to hopefully have these substantive discussions about the candidates. For example, we had UNF's Matt Corrigan on the program yesterday giving a really good analysis of a lot of the candidates. So keep listening for that. Meanwhile, we want to talk about one other news item from the week. State and local agencies trying to deal with hundreds of untested rape kits stored at the JSO for years say they've gotten approval for some funding and want to reduce the backlog. Wes White, a candidate for the Office of Local State Attorney, held a press conference about this, saying that there needs to be even more attention paid to the issue of the rape kit backlog in Jacksonville. Did you cover this, AG?
Yes, I did. I was there, and a lot of the local media was there also. And, you know, White was very direct in saying that Angela Corey needs to ensure that action, you know, happens on this front, resolving the backlog, which goes back apparently to 1984, he said. And really the issue that Corey says it is funding. And, you know, White says, well, it's priorities. You've got the funding there. And White even made a charge that part of the funding went to Angela Corey's pension. So he had a lot of inside baseball in this press conference.
Yeah, that was where it started sounding like it was getting really nasty, having written, you know, a bunch about pensions and Angela Corey's pension in particular, and having had some angry conversations around that. She doesn't like people poking at her pension.
No.
for him to specifically basically say, you're not testing rape kits because you're increasing your pension, that's not the type of thing that she's going to, you know, take lying down.
Yeah, that campaign is only going to heat up as we go along. Also, big business news this week. Home Depot buying home repair and maintenance product seller Interline Brands for $1.6 billion. Interline headquartered in our area. That's a big business headline, Tim.
It's huge news. Huge news for the company. Actually, for both companies. It gives Home Depot a entree into a market that they've kind of struggled to get that. It's called MRO, maintenance, repair, and overhaul. They've struggled trying to get a lot of traction there. Interline Brands will give that to them, but it'll be great for Interline as well. I mean, having one of the largest companies, what, 33rd largest company in the country behind them can only be a good thing, assuming that they actually keep their presence here, which is kind of the unknown question.
Right. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, never a shortage of material for you. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Now, only in Florida does tweeting your desire for marijuana generate a tweet back from the cops. Tuesday, Twitter user @RosaSparks tweeted, "Somebody bring me weed, I'll pay for it." The Palm Beach Sheriff's Office @PB County Sheriff responded by tweeting back, "Where should we meet you?"
I saw this story and knew you were going to use it this week.
The tweet has gone viral with over 12,000 retweets. No word if deputies actually tracked Rosa down. Okay.
Rosa Sparks.
Huh? Yeah, Rosa Sparks. Only in Florida do suburban homeowners find huge black bears asleep in the backyard. Bob Cross of Lake Mary spotted the bear and even got a few photos. He had apparently dozed off after one big meal. The bear dragged a 20-pound bag of dog food from the garage to under the shade of a tree and went to town on it. Cross watched the bear toss and turn, laughing at how human-like he appeared as he was sleeping and snoozing away.
And that bear's got the hypoglow.
This porridge is too cold.
And finally, only in Florida can you come down with an absolutely biblical case of leprosy.
Give him a hand.
Leprosy! The ancient disease making a comeback thanks to armadillos.
That's stumping me.
9 leprosy cases reported around the state so far this year. They all involve people who had direct contact with armadillos. They are the only animal to carry leprosy, a bacterial disease that affects the skin and nerves. There was a diagnosis in Flagler County, Mark, just a few weeks ago. Don't touch armadillos.
Okay, have you seen armadillos? You should not have to be told, don't touch armadillos.
Thank you so much for being here, Mark Woods, Tim Gibbons, and A.G. Gankarski. Guys, always a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We're back in a moment.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Morning keynote speaker, mental health advocate Jessie Close, who wants to change how people talk and think about mental illness. An ambassador for Bring Change to Mind, a not-for-profit organization founded by Jessie's sister, actress Glenn Close. Jessie fights stigma and misunderstandings to create a clearer picture of mental disorders. Good for you. Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to interviews with two people who died in the past few days. E.L. Doctorow is best known for his novels Ragtime, Billy Bathgate, and the Book of Daniel. He was 84. Marlene Sanders was one of the first women to sit at the TV network news anchor desk. She also reported from Vietnam. She too was 84. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Now, I had a boyfriend. He was going for a Cat Stevens look, but it doesn't really work when you have a retainer. He also had a tendency to refer to me as m'lady.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live. This week, camp, cars, cockroaches, and the Kremlin on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to announce that Mary Enworth will be this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach. Mary is co-author of Pathways to the Common Core. She is deputy director of middle schools at the Teachers Reading and Writing Project, Columbia University. Mary is just one of the many great speakers you will hear throughout the day. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to WJCT/teach.
Welcome back. Well, for years now, hungry Jacksonville diners have lined up for Chef Celestia Mobley's fried chicken, mac and cheese, and classic Southern sides at the Potter's House Soul Food Bistro. Now, these classic comfort foods passed down for generations are being shared with the whole world because Chef Celestia is out with a new cookbook, Southern Goodness. She joins us now to let us peek inside these pages. Chef Celestia, great to meet you.
Great to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to see you. I love the Potter's House. Two locations in the city, one on Lenox Avenue, one at Atlantic and Kernan. If you've never been to the Potter's House, you just owe it to yourself to go. So tell us how the cookbook came about, Southern Goodness.
Southern Goodness. Well, I was born and raised here in Jacksonville, and my grandmother was an excellent cook. And I was always, I say, a greedy kid. So anything that I enjoyed eating, I had to learn how to cook.
Had to learn how to make it.
And there's, I'm noticing that the generation of my daughter, who's 22, they don't cook, but they love the food.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I really need to write a cookbook so that the legacy of my grandmother and others will stay around.
Right.
So
we got to pass these recipes down.
We got to pass them down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Southern cooking is more than just food. It's really a whole culture. It's a whole sense of soul and love, mm-hmm, and family.
Family.
And it's a big deal.
It really is. And that's one of my sayings is the secret ingredient is love. You have to put it in there. And it has to be taught, has to be passed down. And it's just a wonderful thing.
Now, you've got all the classics in this book, right?
Fried
chicken, mac and cheese, greens, what, cobbler, what all's in the book? You name it.
You name most of them. It's 140 recipes. Mac and cheese, of course. Red velvet cake, hummingbird cake, all the classic desserts. It's very classic. There's a little, as I call, foo-foo things in there because I am classically trained.
That's right, you are. And in fact, let me just give you your props. You recently made the final four of Steve Harvey's national competition in the best soul food category. You're the only Florida chef that made it to the finals. Mm-hmm. The American Culinary Federation just honored the Potter's House Soul Food Bistro with an Achievement of Excellence award at their event in Charleston.
That was awesome. That was such an honor to have that.
And the Potter's House, it's so well-deserved. Now, for years, there was the one location over on Lenox.
Mm-hmm.
You expanded recently to a second location along Atlantic Boulevard at Kernan, I believe. And that's been successful, too.
Well, we started out on Normandy, which is right across in the old Southern Bell building across from Popeye's. And we were there for a few years before we moved over to the Lenox location. So we were in like a little small 600 feet. It was very small, but we expanded quickly because the lines stayed out the door.
Oh, and the lines are out the door every day, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, from every time I've been by.
Yes, we are doing really well. And that goes to show you people love comfort food.
Yeah.
You know, it's moderation. And then some people think, okay, well, we can't eat there all the time, but we do have roasted chicken and tilapia and
you got some healthy options there.
But come on, it's hard for people
come on
to
now.
Pass up the fried chicken.
I'm not not passing up that fried chicken. No way. I'm not going over there for tilapia. Come on, Chef Celestia.
But we do. I'm proud of it.
Now, I'm proud of you for offering it. That's great. But let's be real.
Even our collard greens, you know, my grandmother put ham hock and different types of pork in it. But we use smoked turkey.
Now, did you write down, when your grandma taught you how to do the recipes, did you just remember how she did it and wrote it all down? Or did she hand you written down recipes?
They really were not written down. We called it dump cooking, where they just put and taste it. They put whatever ingredients in it and tasted it and adjusted it. So there really wasn't recipes. I had to actually cook several of these items and write them down as we, you know, in order to produce the cookbook. So it really wasn't that easy. It took a lot of time because I'm not used to having standard. Now, for the restaurant, we do, because we try to have things very consistent.
Yeah.
But that's bulk. I mean, we cook thousands and thousands of pounds of chicken and oxtails and different things. So for it to be a small quantity, I actually had to take time to write it out.
A lot of work went into this. Mm-hmm.
Now, the baked goods, of course, were recipes like the red velvet cake and pound cake and different things like that, because you have to, you know, that's a science. So you have to
put
those down.
What's your favorite recipe?
Oh, God.
Hard to say.
I guess my favorite recipe, it's hard to say. I'm a dessert person. I love desserts.
You know it. I love the cobbler at the Potter's House. But I also like the red velvet cake.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong.
It's hard for me to say, because like I say, I love to eat. So everything really is. You know what? The Riker lamb, I would say, is one of my favorites. And that's because I don't get it that often. I don't eat it that often. So that's one. I have a char-grilled oyster recipe in there. And I actually visited a restaurant in Sandestin area, and it was so delicious. So I had to come home and try and recreate it.
That's in the book?
That's in the book.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's so delicious. And it's such a family. Everyone loves it. Even people who don't really like oysters that much, they love this.
Well, you're going to love everything in this cookbook. And it's available on Amazon, of course. But what you really need to do is go have lunch or dinner at the Potter's House and pick up a copy of Southern Goodness by Chef Celestia Mobley. The Potter's House on Lenox and at Atlantic and Kernan, the best soul food around. And will you autograph a copy for me?
I will. Okay. So I brought it for you.
I can't wait to take it home. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
A quick break and we're back with Judy Wells.
WJZT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJZT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjzt.org/thesquare.
I'm Christian McBride. This week on Jazz Night in America, Choro music is fast, precise, virtuosic, Brazilian, and interpreted by clarinetist Anat Cohen at Jazz Lincoln Center.
And we like to call it the father of samba and the grandfather of bossa nova. And I just love it.
That's this week on Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Motorcycles can be really loud, and thanks to the wind, they're actually quite loud for the rider, too.
When you talk to the average serious motorcyclist, he usually has to turn one ear or the other because one is pretty much shot.
But in some states, riding with earplugs in both ears is illegal. Hearing loss on the road. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Girls' Day Out, Saturday, August 15th. Hyatt Hotel offers each of us the opportunity to redefine and recommit to our individual health goals. Here's what you can expect. Trusted experts discussing wellness topics that will interest you. Free house screenings, pampering, good food, and lots of laughs with your BFFs. Tickets available at wjct.org/baptistgoodforyou or call 904-549-2938.
Well, finally this hour, during these dog days of summer, Floridians are dreaming of cooler climates and lazy vacation days, maybe in the Northeast, up north, way up north. If you're hankering to get away from all this heat and humidity, our travel expert Judy Wells says you need to consider a visit to what she calls Lobster Land. Judy, when can I go? Good morning.
Good morning. Anytime you want. Well, you know, the snowbirds come down here in the winter. It's only fair that we return the favor and go up north in the summer.
Yes.
Just think, you've got temperatures in the 50s at night.
Oh, I know.
50s, 60s at night, 70s and 80s by day, clear air, no humidity.
And the ocean and great lobster.
And lobsters and scallops and wonderful fish, and it's heaven on earth.
Now, you have some recommendations, which I'm going to write down every word, because I want to visit this part of the world so badly. Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Maine. Tell us where we need to go.
Well, it's all on wellsworld.net. But about 2 hours out of Halifax, which is a wonderful place to start. If you fly in, you have to start in Halifax. Is the Liscomb Lodge Resort and Conference Center. And it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's isolation. It's beautiful. On the way, you go past Barry Colpitt's place, which is you can't miss, the primary folk artist in Nova Scotia. And you have Sherbrooke Village, which recreates a 19th century boom port town. Then Digby, farther west, is the scallop capital of the world. You also find lobster. You find lobster in all of these places. The town is quaint. There's a fun walking tour with Admiral Digby. And it's surrounded by little towns and coves and bays that are just wonderful. Annapolis Royal is beautiful. The Rendezvous de la Baie is the Acadian Center. And Digby Pines Golf Resort and Spa, which has been around for 100 years, is the place to stay. It's a grand hotel and absolutely delightful. From Digby, across the Digby Gut, I love that.
That's what they call it?
The Gut. You take the ferry across to New Brunswick. And about an hour and a half, 2 hours from there, you hit the Algonquin Resort in St. Andrews by the Sea, which opened in 1889 and added a golf course in 1894. So they know how to do things. Braxton's, the restaurant there, is one of the finest hotel restaurants I've ever eaten in.
And I'm looking at your website, looking at the photo of this resort. Yeah, I could definitely be very okay with a trip to this resort.
And if you were a child in a certain period, you will know about Passamaquoddy Bay. Because that's where the dragon lived.
Now, we're still in Canada, but you want to...
We're still in Canada.
We're in
New Brunswick at this point.
But you want to... Then you say, make your way down to Maine.
Then make your way down to Maine. And, of course, Portland is the capital. It's the big city there. And it's an absolute delight. The treat of my trip there was going out on the Lucky Catch. It is a tourist/lobster boat. They have the lobster license. They have real pots out there, and Captain Tom will deck you out in all the equipment, and then show you how they harvest lobster, how they winch the traps in, take the lobsters out, measure them, rebait, and put them back down. Kids love it, absolutely adore it. So do adults. And Algonquin. which to me is one of the quintessential little Maine town, coastal towns, and Perkins Cove nearby will remind you of Murder, She Wrote, Cabot's Cove.
Cabot's Cove.
Oh, it is. It's all touristy, but there I did a lobster roll crawl, and we tasted lobster rolls all over.
Speaking of which, on your website, I see that the Maine Lobster Festival is July 29th through August 2nd in Rockland and Camden, Maine. But of course, you can go up there anytime this summer for the best Maine lobster
in the world. And as one person said to me, what's the difference between a Canadian lobster and a Maine lobster? Who caught it?
Oh, I want to go so badly. I would advise everyone to go to Judy's website, wellsworld.net, wellsworld.net, for the best travel tips to Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Maine. Where are you off to next?
I'm leaving today to go up to North Georgia to visit family and friends, but in mid-August, I go to Cambodia and Vietnam.
Of course you do, because you're Judy Wells.
Well, I have the shots to prove that hurts.
I can't wait to hear about that one. Thank you so much for being with
us. It's always my pleasure, Melissa.
Again, it's wellsworld.net, and that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Just subscribe to that daily podcast. We're now up on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.